Let's change our focus just a little bit. Let's talk about who we're going to vote for if we've made up our minds on this coming Tuesday and why you've made that decision. All of you have become experts of sorts in the last few months, learning a lot about some of the major issues here and listening at the state fair and other situations, other forums we've had to the candidates personally. Have you made up your mind, Gary Anderson of Lakeville?
Well, I think tonight it's very interesting when I look at what each one had to say. I try to keep an open mind, and I think there might be about 20% of the voters who are still undecided. And tonight, for me, both Humphrey and Coleman seem to be in a defensive posture. They seem to be kind of going at each other and kind of even backpedaling, where I think tonight Jesse probably made some inroads into that undecided category with his one-liners, albeit, but with his quick response. Okay. And I think he probably came out a clear winner tonight.
Let's go to Lucille's Kitchen in North Minneapolis. Who are you going to vote for and why? Do you know?
That's not the question that I wanted to answer, but I will answer the question, though. I'm going to vote for Mr. Humphrey because I believe that Mr. Humphrey offers the best alternative as far as some of the questions dealing with education or some of the questions dealing with poverty. I think Mr. Humphrey also has is not a reactionary enough to be able to just sort of narrow in on tax questions and be dishonest as far as those questions are concerned. Mr. Coleman, when you talk about St. Paul, he talks about reducing taxes every year that he's been in office. But I think if people look at their electric bill, if people look at some of the utilities they have, if people look at some of the other fees that they are paying, that they're actually paying more. So they may have had $2 decrease as far as taxes is concerned, but $128 they spent in some other areas that offset that in some way. So, in fact, they did not have a reduction. That's not honesty as far as the question is concerned. I think Mr. Humphrey came up with programs that I think, and when I say programs, I think we're going to have to put some dollars into the areas as far as solutions are concerned, real solutions. And the other thing I guess I'm concerned about is people talk about cutting back on programs. I served as a legislator myself, and for the last 20 years, if you look, we have cut. We've cut to the point that people's lives are in jeopardy. I'm talking about senior citizens. I'm talking about people who are needing health care. And I'm talking about people where there are no safety nets at all. And we need to be able to make sure that we have compassion in the state of Minnesota. And I think Mr. Humphrey offers the best alternative as far as compassion is concerned.
I think you've been hearing from former State Representative Randy Statton. Am I right, Randy?
That's correct.
Good to hear from you. What about in Duluth? Who's got an answer to the question, who are you going to vote for and why?
Well, I haven't decided who I'm going to vote for yet. Probably won't know until I get down there, honestly. But I'm leaning towards, like, Norm Coleman, because from where I'm from, he's got the best issues. He brings up, like, the tax cut. And up here, that's a big thing because a lot of us, we don't have a lot of money to spend around. And the more tax break we get, the better off we're going to be. Thank you.
Thank you. Gary Sugar, who are you going to vote for and why?
I haven't made up my mind yet completely, but I'm leaning more toward Mr. Humphrey because I'm not rich enough to be a Republican.
Say a little more what you mean by that.
Well, they talk about giving this money back and all of this stuff, and he talks about his billion-dollar tax cuts and all of that, but there seems to be an awful lot of time where we need some of the stuff for taxes. And I find that giving the money back, it's going to cost him $20 million just to write the checks to give it back. So he's not really going to give it all back to us anyway.
Interesting observation. How about in Crookston? Who's got a comment? Who are you going to vote for and why?
Well, I'm going to vote for whichever candidate is the best for agriculture for Minnesota. You've heard about Northwest Minnesota and the crisis we're going through. I was hoping to get some answers on that tonight. We've got two of the three candidates have already favored a livestock moratorium for new livestock facilities in the state of Minnesota. Well, when you've got a crisis where our crops do not come up to quality and they go as feed, and if growers want to get into a different type of agriculture, as was suggested tonight, livestock is a great place to do it, or other crops, or other feed crops that can be fed to livestock. But two of the candidates want to shut down any livestock growth in the state, and that'll be the final death knell for Northwest.
Let's be brave and name names. Who are those two, and who are you voting for?
Well, Skip Humphrey and Jesse Ventura both said that they favor the moratorium, and Norm Coleman hasn't. And I was hoping to get a few more answers from those two candidates tonight if they still feel that way.
I'm standing. You know, actually, you know, one thing we do know about this race is that there's a gender gap, and we've so far heard from mostly the men in the audiences tonight. So I'd like to hear from some of the women, if at all possible. But for now, I'm here with Peter Zeller. And who are you going to vote for, and why?
I think the choice is very clear for Minnesota. Norm Coleman is clearly the best communicator. He's the best choice for a prosperous Minnesota. I think the Humphrey paradigm is really the paradigm of the 1960s, where you have to trust government for a program to better our lives. And Coleman has the paradigm of the future, where you're empowering families, you're giving them the tax break and the money to spend the way that they can best take care of their family.
One more of these, and then I'd like to redirect the question, maybe starting up in Duluth with the some comments on this Ventura phenomenon we've been seeing this year. Charles Swanson, who are you going to vote for and why?
Well, I'm going to vote for Skip because I agree with what the man just said. If everyone was healthy and happy and all children were wanted and everything was rosy, Norm Coleman might be the best person. But realistically, a lot of families and a lot of people are hurting, and I don't think that the other two candidates, I was kind of disappointed in Jesse's comments about not favoring pre-kindergarten education for kids, because I think that's really important. And that's why I think Skip will be the best candidate. And, you know, democracy is about process, and I really enjoyed this process. And process is going to come to an end on Tuesday, and everyone has to pick their own individual person that is the right for them. And they need to say, well, what's my priority, and vote. And that's the most important thing. There should be no excuse unless you're in a coma for not voting on Tuesday.
That's probably a good get-out-the-vote speech, and we'll ask for some more of those before this evening is over. We've been amazed, I think, at the fact that this turned into a three-way race at the end here, that the Ventura candidacy is as strong as it is in the polls. This was something we didn't forecast way back in February when the Citizens Forum process started. Up until this, Jim Newman, is someone prepared to explain this Ventura phenomenon to me?
Hi. I don't know if I'm prepared to explain that or not. I think it's kind of a reaction. People have become rather bored with politics. You know, you hear the same things from both parties over and over again. And Jesse's brought a new mix into the race, and it is exciting. I'm not going to vote for him, but I think it's added a lot of excitement to the race.
Thank you. Let's ask that question at Lucille's Kitchen. What's going on with the Jesse Ventura support?
Oh, I heard a lot of laughter with Ventura, you know, coming up with some of the statements he had to come up with. You know, we don't need none of the stuff that he's talking about in our communities, you know, because as far as I know, hemp is a gateway drug, if you understand what I'm saying. At any rate, I didn't get up because I wanted to do that anyway. What I wanted to talk about was that I probably will vote for Humphrey. And second, that voting is extremely important because, you see, I come from that southern background where we had to pay poll taxes and where, you know, folks got beaten. I grew up in Jim Crow. So, you know, I will go out and vote because I know that it is important, and I can't do that to my people by not voting. And it is important whether folks enjoy or like every candidate or whatever, it is important that we vote because that is our right to do so. And that I think that all of the citizens who are gathered together this evening need to go out and tell their folks they need to vote. You don't have to tell them who to vote for, but they need to tell them to vote because it is important. It is our right. And then we sit back and we're mad because people don't do anything we want them to do. They're not going to do it anyway. But at least, you know, we have made our statement. We have said, this is who I want. This is what I want. And we need to exercise that right a little bit more.
You know, I think they could use you in the race for Secretary of State. You do a nice get-out-the-vote speech. But we didn't catch your name, and I'd like you to say just a little more about why the Jesse Ventura candidacy isn't as popular with you as it is with some other parts of the state.
My name is Notando Zulu. I live in North Minneapolis. I am a storyteller. Ventura, it just doesn't make sense to me. I have worked for the Institute on Black Chemical Abuse, now African American Family Services, and I have seen the destruction of drugs in our community. I also know that, you know, marijuana, you know, hemp, all of that stuff, those are gateway drugs. Why are we going to, you know, act like that's all they're going to do? They're going to grow some new kind of clothes or something. You know, that's stupid. So that's why Ventura doesn't cut any ice around here with us.
Let's have a reaction to that here from the KPCA studio.
Well, that's my name is Dean Elzer from Minneapolis. Jesse Ventura has added interest to the campaign, and I applaud him getting involved in the process, but there's a very fundamental question. Is Jesse Ventura genuinely qualified to serve as governor of Minnesota and to serve as a chief executive? Interestingly, he added something of his own on his own testimony that raises questions about this. When people ask him about his qualifications, he says, I served as mayor of Brooklyn Park. Secondly, it's interesting, when people ask about the tax increases in Brooklyn Park, he says, well, it's just a weak mayor-council system. All I have is one vote. But one of the most important functions of the governor is to serve as chief executive of the administrative branch of government. But Brooklyn Park's weak mayor system has no administrative authority and no administrative capacity. I'm glad that Jesse's been here, but let's all step back, take a deep breath, and say, is this gentleman genuinely qualified to serve as governor of the state of Minnesota?
I'm here in the studio. Finally, women raising their hands. I mean, what do you think of the gender gap? What do you think of the three-way race? I mean, what do you make of all of this? It's a very tight race going into Tuesday.
I've put a lot of consideration. I like both Skip and Jesse, and I finally decided that I'm going to vote for Jesse, because what I see is that the Democratic and Republican parties are too close. If you really get close and analyze it, they're not talking about a lot of different issues. Someone said it's like Coke and Pepsi. There's not a big difference. So I feel that I want to send a message to the existing party structure that the people want to be heard. I do not think that the existing parties are serving the people, and that's why I'm voting for Jesse, because I think it's a vote to send a message that we need a change. Let's allow the people to speak.
Thanks, Sandra. And Kristen, who can explain the Jesse Ventura phenomenon, whether you're for him or against him? Hi, Carolyn again.
Well, I just have a comment. I think I am a woman, and I have been talking this evening, so I have heard from some of the female gender. Thank you. Jesse, I don't know if I can... how did you phrase that? The Jesse
phenomenon, yes.
What is a phenomenon? Something unexplainable. I think that when you look at Jesse and he talks about being the common man, I wonder what he means by the common man. A movie star, a professional wrestler, I'm not sure, but, you know, I don't know this as fact, but I believe that he is married and his wife has a very lucrative business, or, you know, I just wonder what he means by the common man.
Sorry, I think we might have lost Carolyn's audio there, but I have just the candidate here, just the citizen, rather, to explain candidate Ventura's appeal. Wayne, you grew up with him.
Yeah.
Well, now, say your last name.
We live, Wayne Esplin from South Minneapolis. We grew up two houses. We're separating our house. I know the guy. He's for real. Everything he said during the campaign about his life is downright, it's the truth. And that's not the reason I'm voting for him, is because I know him. The reason I'm voting for him, and everybody that I talk to, we're sick and tired of the Democrats and Republicans, back and forth, back and forth. As far as my civics class, governors do not have a vote. They've got a pen. They cannot promise you tax cuts. That's the legislature. So these other two are sitting up here, politicians all the way. They've been there all their life. I like Skip Humphrey's father. I've voted for him before. He was a great man. He's following in his father's footsteps. He's a political, he'll be there for the rest of his life. Jesse Ventura will not be there. He's going there for one thing, to change the system. He put it right the other night. Abraham Lincoln was a third party candidate, and that's exactly what he is, and that's why most people that are voting for him, that's the reason. We want the change. we're sick of this Democrat and Republicans coming out and promising everything and giving nothing, which they can't give anyways.
I understand somebody in Duluth with Jim Newman is ready to pop in on this.
Hi, I'm Sarah Trone, and I'm a senior at the College of St. Scholastic in Duluth. And I'd just like to say this about Ventura. I think that most of his appeal comes from his dramatic stage presence, and I'm sure he learned that mostly from his professional wrestling days. But my opinion of Ventura is he's like a football coach who's got great pep talks but no game plan. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Of course, too, there's that issue of he has to work with two houses and the other two parties, Democrats and Republicans, and I'm wondering how that will work for a Reform Party governor.
That's something certainly for voters to think about as they get ready to make those decisions. Do you think that the situation is quite fluid, Karen, that we have a lot of undecided voters this weekend?
I don't know. You know, you hear the people, the pundits, as we say, the pundits who say that some of what we heard tonight, that maybe a vote for Ventura is a vote of a disenfranchised electorate, if you will. And also, I think the question is the Ventura vote now in the polls a soft vote come Tuesday?
Could be. I wonder, one question I'd like to put to the citizens all around the state, what are you most looking for in the next governor? Is it a big tax cut? In which case, it sounds like the tax cutting candidate here is Norm Coleman. Or is it a renewed emphasis on education? And I think Skip Humphrey probably talks about education the most. Or is it just the blast of fresh air that Jesse promises? What are you looking for most in the next governor? Crookston is ready to go with that, I understand. Crookston?
I'm Milo Matheson, and I'd like to comment on the second person on the ticket. Roger Moe is from our particular area, and we have tremendous respect for this person. He has been a leader, Senate leader, for many years. One of the more experienced men we have in government. And so I'd like to say a comment about this particular person. I believe he would be an excellent backup person. He's a person who listens, who cares, and we know him. And if he agreed to go with Humphrey, then I believe that Humphrey's stature is elevated just by the fact that Roger Moe would join his team.
Thank you for that comment. What are you looking for most in the governor, in the next governor?
My name is Sheila Akis. I'm from South Minneapolis, and I want a governor that's going to continue the programs that make this a great state to live in, that has high standards in education, has high standards for people getting the social services that they need, and for me, Skip Humphrey stands for that.
Very good. Who else wants in on this? Hi.
Hi. I'm Clyde Boyer from Forest Lake. I'm looking in a governor the same qualities I'm looking for in any other leader, and that's one who does not offer simplistic answers to complex problems. My involvement in the Minnesota Citizens Forum over the last 2 years motivated me to get involved in politics and to be a strong and active supporter for Skip Humphrey. And I strongly believe in the principles that he stands for to service the needs of all citizens of this state, regardless of their economic situation. His strong commitment to education, beginning at the preschool level, for strong education and tax credits for college students, for his emphasis on all the social services. I believe we need to pay to allow, to pay our taxes to benefit the greater need of all people that are in need in this state.
First to Lucille's Kitchen in North Minneapolis and then to Duluth, what are you looking for most from the next governor?
I'm Doris Slaughter from South Minneapolis, and I would like to see more tax relief for low-income seniors.
Do you think there's a particular candidate who would be most likely to give that to you, Doris?
Yes, Skip Humphrey.
Okay, well, there's a woman with a few words, but to the point. I appreciate that. How about in Duluth? In Duluth, someone, what are you looking for most from this next governor?
What I'm looking most for, my name is Joe Peterson from Duluth. I would like to know what the next governor would do if he would sign a bill into law making term limits for a governor not to serve more than 12 years.
Thank you. Karen?
Your name and where you're from, and what are you looking for in the next governor of the state?
I'm Patricia Ketterling from Rochester, Minnesota, and I am looking for somebody who has had some good experience in governing and whose party has things that I believe in. Somebody who will be able to communicate with different types of people. And I believe that Mr. Coleman is the gentleman for me.
Okay. Back to Lucille's with someone.
Hi, my name is Rosalind Watson. I'd like to know what the next governor is going to do with all these boarded up houses that can be used for people to live in that don't have a place to stay.
Do you think there's a particular candidate who's good on that issue for you?
What I want to find out.
So far, do you know where you, how you'll be voting on Tuesday?
Not yet.
Okay, well, I hope that that's a question we can get answered. Here's another citizen.
Hi, I'm Norman Pyle from Stillwater. One thing I think it would be important for us to think about is the statement that Skip Humphrey said on education. There's been a lot of criticism of waste and inefficiency in the school systems in Minnesota, but what Skip said was a lot of money was being spent trying to reduce the class sizes, but it's hard for the schools to reduce the class sizes when they have to use that money to cover other areas that they're underfunded in. So taking a look at the fact that maybe the problem is really all the way along in the Carlson administration over the last few years of cutting money and cutting money and cutting money out of education has caused this problem, and maybe Skip has got the right answer here that we should consider.
I'm standing here with Mark Dolan of Rosemount. How can you wrap this up? We're heading toward the election day on Tuesday. Who would you vote for? What are you looking for in a leader? Are you nearing a decision?
Well, I'm still undecided, but the debate this evening was helpful. I think that having three candidates is illuminating in explaining what the proper role of government is. And I think that it's a crossroads election for Minnesotans. I think Skip Humphrey represents core values in Minnesota, typical democratic values in Minnesota. We have high standards for education. And I think Norm Coleman is a very big change, and that big change is sweeping the country. And I'm not sure whether Minnesotans gain a lot from adopting standards from other places in the country. I think this is a pretty good place to live already, and we have a lot to lose if we go down the road of just tax cuts being the answer for everything. I'm not sure that's right for Minnesota. I think we have high home ownership rates. We have high education standards, and we have a lot to lose. So people should think carefully on Tuesday.
Any comments on Jesse?
Oh, I think because he's in the middle, he's illuminating. I think it juxtaposes the two very well.
Dan in Crookston, one more citizen there. What are you looking for in a candidate for governor, and who best fills the bill?
Hi, my name is Maris Eckworth from Crookston. And to tell you honestly, I just turned 18, and this will be my first year voting. And so far, watching tonight, I can say I'm going to vote for Jesse Ventura. To tell you the truth, I don't know why. I guess I like what he had to say, so that's what I'm going to vote for.
Well, you have to tell us just a little more. What was it that he said that you particularly liked?
I like the part about growing hemp.
Well, it is something we haven't heard an awful lot about from the other candidates. I think that's true. One more here.
Hi, I'm Ramona Kassenbauer from Mora. The thing I'm looking for most in a governor is the responsibility. Okay, they're talking about tax cuts, but then we have these programs that they also want to see, sliding daycare fee, Head Start programs. I'm a single mom supporting two children. If it wasn't for my parents, I'd be on a street corner because I work a swing shift. Do you know how expensive daycare is nowadays? Sliding daycare fee is so backed up, it's hard to get into. Okay, great, they're talking about tax cuts. So where is that money going to come from when they want to start putting these programs into place?
Which candidate best fills the bill for you?
Well, I was thinking very strongly about Jesse when I first came in, and then he started making those comments about sliding daycare and Head Start programs. And now I'm taking a step back. I guess I'll have to cook some more over the weekend.
Well, I have a sense here that we have a number of undecided citizens
still in this room and probably around the state tonight. I have a sense, too, that we are a rather divided group in St. Paul. Vuzi, 15-second parting thought. How, in your community, is this race being perceived?
I think that in terms of 15 seconds, I don't know if I'll make it, but at any rate, in terms of how it's being perceived, I think it's really being perceived as a race that's going to be extremely tight. I think that indeed the one-liners have come out so that they almost sound like they're common sense, and that some folks really really respond to that almost common sense type of approach, when in fact it really is not common sense and it is not being really very serious. I like the last young lady's comments. I appreciate the fact that the citizens have stuck in here and have been very patient in trying to learn over here at Lucille's Kitchen and have wanted to be a strong part of the process. I think that our folks are going to get out and vote and make a difference.
Yeah. And thank you to Lucille's for your involvement tonight. In Jim Newman in Duluth, quickly, how would you summarize the reaction to this race in Duluth and northeastern Minnesota?
Well, first of all, I join my colleagues in applauding the citizens. I think they've influenced the race for the better. I think this area will mostly still go for Humphrey, but Coleman, perhaps because Carlson, as the governor, has been doing reasonably well, good economy. I don't think Humphrey's going to carry northeastern Minnesota as strongly as he might wish. As for Ventura, I think he will get some votes, but I think he is still mainly a novelty candidate.
Okay, and then Crookston, what's your final shot on this race, Dan?
I think it's going to come down to who can get the voters out. The voter turnout is going to be the big factor in deciding. Jesse Ventura has attracted a lot of attention, but a lot of people say when you begin talking about Jesse Ventura, I'm not really sure. So there's a question of whether they'll vote for him when they go to the voting booth.
Well, thank you, Dan. I think I speak for all the citizens in all the locations to ask Minnesotans to take this race as seriously as all of them have and to get out to vote on Tuesday. On behalf of all the media partners in the Citizens Forum Project, thank you so much for watching tonight.
7. You've heard the three major party candidates for governor debate the issue this evening, but there are five more candidates for governor who have filed for election with minor party status. To become a major party, these candidates would have to get 5% of the vote on Tuesday and at least one vote in each county. Minnesota Public Radio invited all of the candidates to record a 5-minute statement, which we've been airing in our news programs during the last 10 days of the campaign. Here's what the minor party candidates for governor have to say.
Hello, this is Fancy Ray McCloney with the People's Champion Party, candidate for the governorship of Minnesota. I want to thank all the good people here at NPR for this wonderful opportunity to reach out and touch and talk to all of you today. You know, if you believe like I believe, Clinton's in the White House, the best the two parties could do was Norm Coleman and Humphrey, this whole campaign is nothing but a big joke. So I say vote for Fancy Ray, a professional comedian, because if I don't get an office, y'all going to have to settle for an amateur. This campaign is nothing but a joke. But folks, there's something seriously wrong here in the state of Minnesota. The reason why I, a professional comedian, decided to run for office was I thought about little black kids and brown kids and red kids and yellow kids who can look at the race and say, look, one of us is in the campaign. For small business owners can look and say, look, one of us is in the race. People living check to check can look and say, one of us is in the race. See, people here in Minneapolis, Twin Cities, are living in poverty. 50% of African Americans live below the poverty level. And I don't hear none of the major candidates talking about that. See, I'm a minor candidate with a major, major ideal. And my ideals are for the black, the white, the red, the brown, and the yellow. People living check to check, you farmers out there, you got a guy, Fancy Ray, that's on your side. And if you're not satisfied with the candidates and what they're talking about, perhaps you should take a look at me and what I'm trying to say about the campaign. Because this whole campaign ain't nothing but a big joke. Want to hear some jokes about the campaign? People ask me, they say, Fancy Ray, why do you want to be governor of Minnesota? Well, why do I want to be governor? It's quite simple. I understand if I'm elected, I get a whole office full of interns. They claim that I'll get only 2% of the vote. Well, maybe politics is like milk, and 2% is the best kind. Got another joke for you. Why did Humphrey cross the road? The polls indicated that he should. Coleman? I call Coleman the switch hitter, because first he was a Jew, then he turned Christian, then he was a Democrat, then he turned Republican. I'm offering $10,000 to the first person who can prove he was a black woman back in the 60s. Jesse. Let's talk about Jesse. Jesse, we got to get serious now. Jesse, to politics is what Barney Fife was to law enforcement. Vote for Fancy Ray. Why should you vote for Fancy Ray? I'll start every one of my speeches with, my fellow Minnesotans, I am here for you. I came up out of nowhere with no political background. And what I'm trying to say, that if you don't like Coleman, vote for Fancy Ray. If you don't like Humphrey, vote for Fancy Ray. I am your candidate for governor. I'm here to represent the people, the little black kids and brown kids and yellow kids and people who have no hope. Fancy Ray is here for you. We're talking about affordable housing. We're talking about the future of our children. Education is so important. And with Fancy Ray at the helm going into this next century, we will deal with education. I want to get parents involved in the PTA. I want to get parents involved in the classrooms. I want to get parents involved in homework at home, because that's where education starts. It's at home. We want to nurture these people. We want to educate these people and get the people up and get on their feet. We're going to talk about drugs. That's a big issue nowadays. Drugs are rampant in this society. No one chooses to go be a drug dealer. Drug dealing is an act of economic desperation. We got to have economic opportunities for everybody so that we all have a chance to succeed. See, the American dream is booming and this economy is doing well, but not all of us are benefiting. Be you black, white, red, brown, or yellow. You're saying, where is this big economy? Where is my Bill Gates? If you can't relate to any of that, maybe Fancy Ray is your candidate. And you should take a look at voting for Fancy Ray McCloney, the people's champion, a champion of the people. Be you black, white, red, brown, yellow, I am your candidate. We're using comedy and satire as a way to pull the covers off of what's wrong in this state. And then we're injecting intelligence, articulation, and some common sense into what needs to be done in this great state of Minnesota. Minnesota, I believe, is the greatest state in the nation. And I believe I am the best man for the job of governor. So please, this November 3rd, vote for Fancy Ray McCloney, the people's champion. I'm running with my mother. My mom, Tony J. McCloney, is my running mate. We're talking family values. We're talking about pulling people together. We're talking prosperity. We're talking positiveness. We're talking about the future of Minnesota. And if you don't like anybody, Fancy Ray is your man. I'm here to represent you, Minnesota. I'm willing to serve you to the best of my abilities. I love you. I love Minnesota. I have a 3-year-old son. I love him. And I thank you for my time. Fancy Ray McCloney, the people's champion. See you November 3rd.
Hello. My name is Ken Pentel, candidate for governor with the Green Party of Minnesota, and the Green Party will be on the ballot for the first time ever in the state of Minnesota's history, and people can celebrate a chance to create a new major party. If we get 5% of the vote, plus one vote in every county, the Green Party will establish a new base of politics in Minnesota for a sound, stable economy and sound, sustainable resource base. The Green Party started in 1994. We ran a gentleman in Legislative District 62A, Cam Gordon, and we ran a Ralph Nader and Winona LaDuc for president and vice president, both in 1996. The Green Party is established based on four pillars: grassroots democracy, social and economic justice, nonviolence, and ecological wisdom. And basically what we're saying is setting forth our policies that when we invest our resources, we want to make sure we do not undermine our water, air, soil, and habitats, and that we build from that economies that give people full human dignity. Dignity defined as food, shelter, clothing, health care, education, transportation, and living wage jobs. So our social and natural world are in balance, sustainable. That is the goal. And there are a variety of ways of making this possible. One key area that we need to look at is our investment, for example, in energy. Minnesota imports 97% of its fuels. We spend about $9 billion a year on coal, oil, uranium, and gas. And what we can do in Minnesota is produce our own fuels in an efficient, renewable way, which will create social stability. And that's basically how can we do that. If we invest in energy-efficient technologies, we can save a great amount of the energy we use, up to 30%. If we invest in renewable energy, farmers now are getting paid, and we can continue this process by putting windmills on the land, as well as energy produced off the windmills. farmers getting paid for crops for energy, so we can have diversified economies in rural Minnesota, keeping dollars as local as long as possible. That's one of the goals. And the other step that we can take is shifting from a low-value flight of capital, clear-cutting of our northern forests to farmers growing fiber for paper. So farm economies would be diversified, as well as we would work on setting up great economic systems that would lead towards the consumer and the farmer having a closer relationship, such as community-supported agriculture has shown us as a guide. Because what we need to do is take care of the soil and the groundwater of this state so the economy is strong well into the future. People that are willing to do that would lead towards farm trusts or no property taxes on farmland. That's one of the goals, and I think that that's a vision that offers the best economic plan in Minnesota right now. The other steps we can take to reduce our cost of living, reduce high taxes, is to build our cities for people and not cars. If we plan for pedestrian-friendly cities well into the future, we will have a more stable economic condition so people can walk to their basic needs, to school, to the store. Then also we can establish bicycle freeways throughout the metro area and then lead towards trains being built as anchors for our community and having bus feeder systems and park and rides. This is sound planning that's not being offered by the major parties at this time. We also want to move in the direction of making democracy healthier. A couple of areas. One is getting total public finance campaigns. That's one of the goals. Getting centralized private and corporate money out of financing our public officials and those same interests out of the state capital, which are filtering good citizen policy and not allowing the best democracy to move forward. And also we're talking about proportional representation, which is practiced in every democracy in the world except in the United States and Canada. Basically, in a region, if you get 10% of the votes, you get 10% of the seats. So people that have some of the richest ideas may not have a lot of money, may not have a lot of access to political power, can get in and help us solve problems. Government's role is solving problems, justice, passing laws, rejecting laws, but it should not be a conduit for well-heeled financial interests. And so what the Green Party has to offer is a reshaping and towards a new transitional society that's healthier, stronger, and sustainable for future generations. So you have a chance for the first time ever to vote for Ken Pentel, Green Party candidate for governor. Walk in that booth, vote for what you believe in, not what you fear, or else we'll lose the integrity of our democracy. Thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Chris Wright with the Grassroots Party. Throughout the election, I have advanced the principle of public safety through an end to prohibition. Prohibition kills more than illegal drugs. On September 6, 1988, in the matter of marijuana rescheduling petition, the Chief Administrative Law Judge of the Drug Enforcement Administration, Francis L. Young, stated, "There is no record in the extensive medical literature describing a proven documented cannabis-induced fatality. In strict medical terms, marijuana is far safer than many foods we commonly consume. For example, eating 10 raw potatoes can cause a toxic response. By comparison, it is physically impossible to eat enough marijuana to induce death. But despite this decision on marijuana safety, many have been killed in prohibition-related murders. Last January, in a Richfield park, an individual was killed in a prohibition-related murder involving marijuana. Less than 4 months ago, 3 law enforcement officials were killed interdicting marijuana. Government is entrusted by the people in whom all power is inherent to protect public safety. Therefore, it is illegitimate to exercise police power to destroy public safety. So how does government usurp the freedom and the power of the people to engage in the obvious destruction of public safety as it relates to marijuana and narcotics? The state increases its police power and political power by justifying the use of authority against a social menace in the name of public safety and seeks the permission of the people to cede their inherent freedom and power to the government to protect them from such evils. If the state and demagogues can convince the people that witches cast harmful spells, then we can justify burning them at the stake. Prohibition is a witch hunt because it kills more than the drugs themselves. The number of fatalities from the direct effects of all the illegal drugs alone costs 5,200 deaths annually. However, the Office of National Drug Control Policy acknowledges that 20,000 people die each year from illegal drugs. That means 3 times more people die from prohibition than die from the drugs themselves. Prohibition reduces supply and fails to reduce demand for drugs, causing unusually high prices. Prohibitionists have subsidized criminals, destroyed public safety, enforced a law racist in origin and in practice, undermined law observance and the Bill of Rights, overburdened the courts, overcrowded the prisons, and have driven up public debt. In fact, prohibition is unenforceable in prison. The intolerable amounts of tyranny and money required to keep drugs out of communities demands repeal. Anyone who would vote for a politician who supported such a policy is either ignorant, evil, or un-American. The schoolyard drug dealer doesn't call the principal or police if he's ripped off or threatened. He arms himself and joins in a gang for safety in numbers. The Al Capones of this world don't eliminate the competition by force of lower prices. They conduct business from the barrel of a gun. It's ironic that the prohibitionists who say to me, "What about the children?" are the ones who endanger our children most. Prohibitionists are the ones who have put metal detectors at the doors of our schools. And it's easy to say no to drugs, but it's hard to dodge a bullet. Prohibition causes corruption of public officials, such as Officer Capistrand, who ripped off the Minneapolis evidence room of his drug money to pay for his gambling habit. Scores of police, Border Patrol, Customs, Coast Guard, CIA, FBI, DEA, ATF, military prosecutors, and judges have been involved in official corruption relating to illicit drugs. American prohibition has undermined the governments of foreign nations like Mexico, Colombia, Peru, Bolivia, and the list goes on. I am the only candidate that has a chance to legalize marijuana in this election. I have a marijuana case before the State Court of Appeals challenging the state's Controlled Substances Act as a violation of Article 13, Section 7 of the Minnesota Constitution. It says any person may sell or peddle the products of the farm or garden occupied and cultivated by him without obtaining a license, therefore. The requirement in the Controlled Substances Act to be in legal possession and a manufacturer is that you have a license through the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy. That requirement is illegal because the Constitution supersedes statute. The court said that you can't sell unsafe products. I prove that there hasn't been any documented death due to pot, and that it's safer than some foods. I proved that marijuana was a product of the farm or garden in 1906 when this was adopted and continued to be until the state illegally adopted the Uniform Narcotics Control Act in 1935. And I pointed out that the state could not have the greater power of making pot illegal completely if it didn't have the lesser power of requiring a license. Ultimately, the court must decide if prohibition is the highest law in the land or is the Constitution. But my prosecutor and candidate for governor, Skip Humphrey, could care less about the Constitution or the rights of farmers. There's a Greek saying that sums it up. When faced with human stupidity, even the gods stand helpless. So if I win this case, Minnesota farmers will be able to grow vast quantities of marijuana, sell vast quantities of marijuana, and we'll have the right to smoke vast quantities of marijuana, vote for Chris Wright at the November 3rd referendum, and I'll bring back the $10 ounce of Primo Bud.
Hi, I'm Frank Ehrman, the Libertarian Party candidate for governor of Minnesota. The Libertarian Party has been in existence since 1972. We are the third largest political party in the United States. We have over 250 people in office across the country, and we are growing. We've more than doubled our membership in Minnesota in the last 2 years. We are not only the third largest political party, but we are the fastest growing. What does the Libertarian Party stand for? Well, obviously, we stand for liberty. We'd like the government to get off your back and out of your pocketbook. We take a consistent, principled approach to government. We are social liberals and economic conservatives. Libertarians want both economic freedoms and social freedoms. We think that if you aren't harming anyone through aggression or fraud, that you ought to be left alone. We would like to see a lot less taxes and a lot less regulation. For starters, the $4 billion surplus should have been given back to the people. That $4 billion was over and above the budget. They should have given it back. That was approximately $1,000 for every man, woman, and child in the state, but they spent it. When they overcharge you at the grocery store, do you let them keep it? No. You make them give it back, and that's what they should have done with the surplus, but they didn't. That makes me angry, and I hope it makes you angry, too. We, the Libertarians, held four rallies at the state capitol to force the politicians to give it back. Our last rally had an estimated 5,000 people in attendance. I never knew we had so many active libertarians in this state. These libertarians were madder than hell, and we tried to let the legislature know that we wanted it back. We wanted it all back, and we wanted it back now, but they went ahead and spent it. Regulation. Libertarians think that people can regulate their own lives. They don't need the government to tell them what to do. I am the only governor candidate that doesn't want to govern. I want you to be able to govern your own life and your own property as you see fit. When I was working for the FAA, as a lark, I once subscribed for a month to the Federal Register, the publication that publishes new and proposed regulations. Every day I got what amounted to a thick magazine, 8.5 inches by 11, fine print, thin paper, printed both sides. By the end of the month, I had 1.5 cubic feet of new and proposed regulations. It weighed over 40 pounds. It was over a bushel. They regulated things like cabbage. It prescribed who, what, where, when, and how it can be grown, marketed, shipped, etc. These regulations don't benefit consumers in the least because the growers, marketers, and shippers have learned how to control the regulation process. They use it to keep out competition and to raise prices. Drugs. I've smoked less than a pack of cigarettes in my life, and I rarely use alcohol. I have never used any drugs stronger than alcohol or tobacco. I don't approve of the use of recreational drugs, but unlike some others, I do not wish to force my convictions on other people. Prohibition of alcohol produced a crime wave, the likes of which we have never seen before. When prohibition ended, the crime wave ended. Now we are suffering from crime related to the prohibition of other drugs, and we have more people in prison per capita than any other major country. When will we realize that drug prohibition doesn't work any better than alcohol prohibition? The major parties lack the political will to correct this problem. Where is the leadership? How many people must die before they figure out that the war on drugs cannot be won? They can't keep drugs out of maximum security prisons. How are they going to keep them out of the country? It can't be done. Guns. The Libertarian Party is the only party that comes out unequivocally in favor of the right to keep and bear arms and the right to carry concealed weapons. Over 30 states have now recognized the right of mentally healthy, law-abiding adults to carry weapons. The result has not been an increase in random violence, as predicted by some, but a reduction in violent crime. I am Frank Grumman, the Libertarian candidate for governor. If you want freedom, you have only one choice in November. Vote Libertarian. Our website is www.lpmn.org. My phone number is 651-455-0967. If elected governor, I will sequester any of the $4 billion that hasn't gone out the door yet and return it to the people. Vote for me, Frank Grumman, Libertarian for governor, in November. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Thomas Fisk, Socialist Workers Party candidate for governor. Working people sense that something is very wrong in 1998. We know firsthand about the massive increase in low-paid temporary and part-time jobs, even during a period of economic recovery. We know about the lengthening of the work week and hear the politicians preach about spending more time with our families. We know that working farmers in Minnesota can't receive a price for any of their crops that covers the cost of production. Tens of millions of workers in Asia and in Europe have been laid off from their jobs. Now something is being done about the situation. Working people in Minnesota, like working people across the United States and around the world, are stepping up our resistance to the employers' attacks on our wages, rights, and living conditions. From the unionists at Northwest Airlines to the workers at US West, the labor movement in Minnesota is beginning to respond. A number of important labor battles have occurred elsewhere, strikes by auto workers in Michigan, transit workers in Philadelphia, McDonald's workers in Cleveland, airline pilots in France. There is a new sentiment that the sacrifices demanded by the employing class are intolerable. This sentiment is reflected in other fights, such as the campaign to defend bilingual education in California, the resurgent struggle for Puerto Rican independence, the growing number of fightbacks against cop brutality and demonstrations to defend affirmative action, the demonstrations by the Hmong against KQRS racism. The resistance that is accelerating among working people around the world comes as a rejection of the attacks that have been imposed on us for many years. The attacks have resulted in a growing disparity between record corporate profits and executive salaries at one end of the social scale and growing impoverishment and misery at the other. Real wages for workers continue to decline. Gains previously won by blacks, Chicanos, and other oppressed nationalities and women are increasingly under attack. The ruling rich carry out attacks on working people in other countries similar to the attacks they do on working people here, through means such as the foreign debt, unequal trade, and military threats and interventions. In the new struggles, working people are beginning to learn that by acting together, we have social power. We are beginning to discover that we have common class interests and the value of solidarity. The Socialist Workers Campaign and its youth supporters, the Young Socialists, are part of this developing fight back. We campaign to help organize and mobilize working people and all those struggling for social justice to use effectively our numbers, our role in the economy, and our capacities for political thought and solidarity. We speak for the interests of working people and all the oppressed. We urge working people to reject the reactionary nationalism of the U.S. rulers, which hold that working people in the United States have a common national interest with the wealthy U.S. rulers. Most importantly, our campaign points the way forward towards the organization of working people's political energies into an effective force independent of the Democratic, Republican, or any other capitalist political party. We explain that it is along this road that working people can prepare a class and its allies to take on and defeat even sharper attacks the capitalist rulers are preparing for us, disarm the ruling class, and replace their government with a government of our own. The Socialist Workers candidates offer a political program around which working people can defend their own class interests and those of other toilers. Defend the right to a job, for a sliding scale of hours and wages, for a shorter work week with no cut in pay, for a massive public works program. Defend Social Security, increase unemployment insurance, workmen's compensation, and public relief programs. Defend and extend affirmative action for a substantial increase in the minimum wage, union wages for all. Desegregate the schools. Defend and extend bilingual education. Defend public education, no vouchers. Defend Native American treaty rights. Stop police brutality. Bring guilty cops to justice. Abolish the death penalty. Defend women's rights. Abortion is a woman's right to choose. Equal rights for gays and lesbians. End farm foreclosures. For a moratorium on farm foreclosures. For a guaranteed market for farmers' products that ensures a living income. Equal rights for immigrants. Stop the deportations. Independence for Puerto Rico. Cancel the third world debt burden on working people. No NATO troops to Kosovo. U.S. troops out of the Arab-Persian Gulf. U.N. inspectors out of Iraq. U.S. forces out of Yugoslavia. No to the expansion of NATO. U.S. hands off Cuba. End the U.S. embargo and travel ban. Repeal the Helms-Burton law. For a workers and farmers government in the United States. The current government represents the wealthy capitalist rulers. Working people need our own government. Such a government would end capitalist rule. In doing so, it would disarm the imperialist war makers, make governmental decisions in the interests of working people, and begin to build socialism shoulder to shoulder with working people around the world. For further information about our campaign or its youth supporters, the Young Socialists, or to volunteer, please call 651-645-1674. That number again is 651-645-1674. Thank you for your consideration. My name again is Thomas Fisk, the Socialist Workers' Party candidate for governor.
You've been listening to the five minor party candidates for governor of Minnesota. All will be on your election ballot on Tuesday, along with the three major party candidates, Republican Norm Coleman, DFLer Skip Humphrey, and Reform Party candidate Jesse Ventura. It is an election year ritual for Secretary of State Joan Grow to make her official prediction of the election day turnout. She shared her prediction with NPR's Lorna Benson today.
I'm predicting that 53% of Minnesota's voters will go to the polls on Tuesday. I'm feeling upbeat about the election. If that number is true, it would be a similar rate of people who participate as did in the last election for governor in 1994.
Why are you feeling upbeat?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. Even though when we make a comparison and we look at 4 years ago, we also had a U.S. Senate race on the ballot in addition to the governor's race. That isn't the case this year. We just have the governor's race. But I believe it is generating a lot more interest and a lot more excitement than there was 4 years ago in the governor's race. And with 4 days left, it is really possible that people who decide at the last minute may swell the voting rolls. Second, there are three proposed amendments to the Constitution. And amendments 1 and 2 that will continue lottery funds for the environment until the year 2025, and the one to put hunting and fishing rights into the Constitution, they seem to be generating a lot of interest, certainly some campaigning for and against on both sides of those issues.
In the past couple of weeks, the governor's race has become much tighter. Do you think that that is a big factor in people being more interested at this point.
Absolutely. I think if there's a huge margin in a race, everyone says, well, I know that person's going to win. I don't need to bother to go vote. Or I'm supporting that candidate, but he's going to win. Or I'm supporting that guy, but he's really down in the polls and going to lose. So the tighter the race, the more excitement, and I think the more people realize their vote really does count.
Do you think Jesse Ventura is attracting new voters or just winning over people who would normally vote Republican or Democrat?
Well, it's difficult to tell. Voter registration has not increased over 4 years ago. In other words, we don't have more registered voters today than we did 4 years ago. So if he is attracting new voters, most of them are not registered yet. Doesn't mean that they can't go to the polls and register on election day. And there may be some of that. In other cases, I think it's just people who may not have been active in recent years or people who have made up their mind to support Ventura for whatever reason it is. But certainly a three-way contest is unusual in Minnesota to have it this close. I think it generates some interest.
You mentioned people will also be interested in voting on the ballot amendments. What factor does the weather play into this? Are you looking ahead to the forecast for Tuesday and wondering if that might play a role?
Well, we did, and we note that at this stage they say it's going to be cold and a possibility of some snow flurries. I don't think cold weather will keep Minnesotans home, and I don't think a little bit of snow will. Now, if we have one of those major blizzards, we have an entirely different situation. But we can hope that the weather people are wrong. Sometimes they are, and we have a bright, sunny day with 50-degree weather. It's certainly more of an incentive to go outside.
You talked a little bit about this, but I want to ask you to look over your past few years as Secretary of State, and this is the last election that you will oversee as Secretary of State. How does it stack up in terms of interest to voters compared to all of the years that you've been in office?
It's hard to rank the races because each year is so different, and dynamics are so different, and you have different sets of candidates and actually different races on the ballot. I think this one is unusual because of the third party candidate having so much support and the very closeness of the race, and it's a little more exciting. There is no incumbent.
Minnesota Secretary of State Joan Groh speaking today with NPR host Lorna Benson.